Let me be blunt. Too many countries are headed in the wrong direction.
We will take aim at that statement. This is Friday, July 17th, and this is VOA Asia. I'm Ira Melman. Also ahead, the top coronavirus expert in the United States has his say. One area of Asia is not only fighting the virus, but also a major drought. We'll look at the changing U.S. political picture, and many foreign au pairs who have been working in the United States are saying, oh my. It is all on today's VOA Asia. The World Health Organization warns that the coronavirus pandemic raging around the globe will get worse if countries don't stick to strict healthcare precautions. However, the world body also says this needs to be done without shifting from lockdown to lockdown. VOA correspondent Mariana Diallo has more.
As coronavirus infections surpass 13 million globally with more than a half a million deaths, the World Health Organization is sounding a new alarm.
Let me be blunt. Too many countries are headed in the wrong direction.
The head of the world body insists without mandating basic outbreak control methods such as physical distancing, wearing masks, or staying home when sick, there's only one way for this pandemic to go.
It's going to get worse and worse.
His remarks come as WHO reported yet another worldwide record of more than 230,000 new cases in 24 hours on Sunday. 10 countries accounted for 80% of that total. More than half of the new confirmed cases came from the United States and Brazil.
Countries are losing gains made as proven measures to reduce risk are not implemented or followed. We're seeing this across the Americas, South Asia, and several countries in Africa.
South Africa accounts for most of the confirmed cases in Africa, with nearly 300,000 cases, including more than 4,000 deaths, according to the Africa Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. Amid a surge in hospitalizations, South African President Cyril Ramaphosa addressed the nation Sunday.
We are now recording well over 12,000 new cases every day. That is the equivalent of 500 new infections every hour of the day.
He reinstated a series of measures, including banning liquor sales to minimize hospitalization due to alcohol-related injuries and ordering a nighttime curfew. The South African president also made it mandatory for all residents to wear face masks when in public. In the U.S., several states are rolling back reopening plans. In California, Governor Gavin Newsom ordered bars and indoor restaurant dining to shut down statewide and also ordered churches, gyms, and hair salons to close in the hardest hit counties.
We're continuing to see hospitalizations rise in the state. We're continuing to see a modest increase in ICUs and number of beds represented by ICU patients throughout the state of California. And we continue to experience an increase in the rate of positivity here in the state of California.
A nail salon owner says the new order will not only affect him, but so many others.
If we don't make no money to pay the rent, the landlord suffer too. So everybody has a problem. Yeah, and then also we don't have income, and then the family, our family, the problem too.
Something the WHO head touched on this week.
We need to reach a sustainable situation where we have adequate control of this virus without shutting down our lives entirely or lurching from lockdown to lockdown, which has a hugely detrimental impact on societies.
And the measures put in place in country by country so far have had varying degrees of success or failure. Mariama Diallo, VOA News, Washington.
These are among the top Asia headlines you'll find right now at voanews.com. China became the first major economy to grow since the start of the coronavirus pandemic, recording an unexpectedly strong 3.2% expansion. The United States is imposing visa restrictions on certain employees of Chinese technology companies, including Huawei. Pakistan and close ally China have formally launched construction at a multi-billion dollar dam in the Pakistan-administered part of the disputed Kashmir region, ignoring rival India's objections to the project. Monsoon floods have swamped large parts of India's densely populated eastern states. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on Facebook at VOA Asia and on the voanews.com website. Infighting over the White House's handling of the coronavirus pandemic is spilling further into public view, with trade advisor Peter Navarro panning Dr. Anthony Fauci as President Donald Trump stands watch. Fauci is the nation's top infectious disease expert. The long-simmering tiff escalated when Navarro wrote an op-ed in USA Today skewering Fauci, writing that the doctor has been wrong about everything I have interacted with him on. So when you ask me whether I listen to Dr. Fauci's advice, my answer is only with skepticism and caution. AP Washington correspondent Sagar Magani reports.
With the pandemic only getting worse, Fauci calls it a bit bizarre. He's looking at the map. Others are engaged in nonsense.
Rather than these games people are playing, let's focus on that.
Telling The Atlantic the nation's going in the wrong direction, with Arizona, Florida, California, and Texas yesterday alone reporting 36,000 new confirmed cases and more than 450 deaths.
So we got to call a timeout, do a pause, and say, what do we need to do?
Sagar Magani, Washington.
Happening now in Asia, China said Thursday it will stick to the Phase 1 trade deal it reached with the United States earlier this year, but warns that it will respond to bullying tactics from Washington as relations continue to deteriorate. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. You're listening to VOA Asia. I'm Ira Melman. As we turn our attention toward U.S. politics, Pennsylvania, Michigan, and Wisconsin are three industrial states Donald Trump narrowly won on his path to the White House in 2016, and which Democrats hope to recapture this year. They are home to many communities where high-wage manufacturing jobs have disappeared in recent decades. VOA's Kate Farabaugh reports from Wisconsin, where job losses have continued during the pandemic as voters gear up for the presidential election in November.
This sprawling Riverside paper mill is one of Wisconsin Rapids' most defining and historic features.
It is the bloodline, the lifeline of Wisconsin Rapids. It's the one thing that has survived through world wars, great depressions. It's been here, and it is the solid. I mean, that's what we depend on here.
The mill employed several generations of Wisconsin State Representative Scott Krug's family, from its peak when thousands passed through its doors to the present, when roughly 900 workers who collect a paycheck from Verso Corporation, the current owners, will be the last. The facility prepared to close in July, in part because the COVID-19 pandemic tanked demand from businesses that use the plant's paper for advertising.
It hits you that this is the first time that this plant will ever shut down in its 120-year history. I mean, that's something that impacts me to my core.
Closure also impacts thousands of other workers, like Laura Delaney, who manages her family's timber harvesting operation.
They were one of the largest suppliers for us to take our hardwood and aspen to.
Now she's sitting on tons of timber without a buyer. She worries about her employees and making payments on new equipment.
Those machines cost upwards of $700,000. They don't pay for themselves if they're not working.
The paper mill's fate is a familiar story in Midwestern states known as the Rust Belt, where plants have disappeared and many who once earned a middle-class wage making everything from cars to refrigerators have lost their jobs and feel overlooked by politicians.
What we do is very important, but I think it's forgotten a lot.
President Trump narrowly won Wisconsin in 2016, promising to reverse U.S. manufacturing job losses.
I feel that he has had to fight an uphill battle the whole time that he's been in there, and I think that if he was left to do the job that he said he was going to do, he would do it very well.
Despite trade wars with China and other nations, manufacturing jobs have not flooded back to the United States on Trump's watch. Presumptive Democratic presidential nominee Joe Biden has led Trump in recent Wisconsin polls.
It's not that Wisconsin voters are enthusiastic about Joe Biden, but they have soured on Donald Trump.
Political scientist Barry Burden sees an erosion of Trump's core rationale for his presidency in the minds of some voters.
I think the real question is whether people trust that Trump is going to lead them to ultimately a better place when it comes to jobs, or whether this is a sign of his failure in trying to deliver the things he was promising 4 years ago.
As he works to find a new owner for the mill, Krug, the first Republican to represent Wisconsin Rapids in the state assembly in 40 years, also faces re-election in the November contest.
The choice for me is still with President Trump, but the choice is a little less solid because of some of the things that were impacting here. So I think that's why we've put so much pressure on the administration to try to step in, because it's time to do some action and make actions louder than words.
Hours away from Wisconsin Rapids, a new facility owned by Taiwanese electronics manufacturer Foxconn promised to create 13,000 jobs. But even before the pandemic, the company reported only about 600 people worked at the site. Kane Fairbaugh, VOA News, Wisconsin Rapids.
News is mobile, and so are you. Get VOA on the go. Get VOA on Google Currents. Get VOA News specifically made for your tablet and smartphone. Clean, simple, fast. Now available for Android or Apple phones or tablets. Download the Google Currents app for free today. Get VOA on Google Currents at voanews.com/currents.
This news from VOA Asia. Thailand's finance minister resigned Thursday in a move that adds uncertainty to policymaking at a time when Southeast Asia's worst-performing economy is struggling to recover from the impact of the COVID-19 crisis. All of the big stories come your way through the day on VOA Asia, Twitter, and Facebook. This is VOA Asia. Now on VOA Asia. Across the Mekong Delta, fishermen, farmers, and their families are hoping the current wet season will end a long-running drought. Its effects are being felt in Myanmar, Thailand, Laos, Vietnam, and in Cambodia, where rainfall has been way short of expectations. Luke Hunt has the story.
According to the Mekong River Commission, rainfall during May and June was about 70% lower than for the same period a year ago. And that is upsetting people who rely on the river system, which, in full flood, is bigger than the size of Belgium. Seasoned fisherman Man Lee Hee has plied these waters for decades and is upset with the construction of dams and what is happening along the Mekong River. He says there are no fish because of the new dams, including Stung Treng, which blocked the river flow. Water levels are going up and down 3 or 4 times a month, depending on whether the dams are open or closed. He adds this rainy season, there has been no rain. The wet season in Southeast Asia is driven by the Indian monsoon. But scientists say rising sea temperatures in the Indian Ocean is changing weather patterns. This can result in extreme drought, a situation which can only get worse with plans to construct about 140 dams in China and Laos. Yan is a Muslim Cham who moved his family back to Cambodia from Vietnam, where he lived during the Pol Pot years. He has lived on a boat and fished for the last 35 years. He says fish numbers have fallen dramatically over the last 5 years and he does not fish anymore. He says he wakes up at 2 a.m. to buy fish at Chang Trama Fish Market and then sells it in the Kandal Market. He says they only make a small profit because they have to buy fish because there are no fish in the river. Yan says his wife works for many hours in the market while he does other jobs like fixing the boat. She sells in the market in the morning, then he picks her up. They pray after lunch and relax for a few hours, then go back to market and sell fish again. At 8 p.m. they come back home. Yan says life on the Mekong is difficult. Satsmay Raw from Troy Chang Va village has lived on a boat since she was born 25 years ago. She says she has never seen water levels this low. She says the water levels can rise, and when the river turns dark in colour, she can catch fish, maybe 2 or 3 kilograms a day. She adds that she heard that a dam collapsed last year when the water was too high. The plight of these river dwellers is grim, and it's a situation that is unlikely to change until this drought, already in its second year, comes to an end. Luke Hunt for VOA News, Phnom Penh, Cambodia.
How dangerous is COVID-19? 80% of the cases are said to be mild. Young and healthy people are at a relatively low risk. Elderly and people with serious health conditions are at risk of fatality. If you have a cough, fever, and shortness of breath, contact a doctor and stay away from other people. For more information, visit the websites at the World Health Organization and the U.S. Centers for Disease and Control. A message from your friends at VOA Asia.
This is VOA Asia. 6 months ago, the U.S. and the Afghan Taliban entered a peace agreement. As part of that deal, the U.S. said that by this week it would reduce its troop numbers in Afghanistan down to 8,600 and withdraw from 5 bases. The Pentagon did announce this week that it has lived up to its commitments. However, U.S. Marine General Kenneth Frank McKenzie, the head of U.S. Central Command, tells VOA Pentagon correspondent Carla Babb in an exclusive interview via telephone from the region Wednesday that the Taliban has not.
Has the Taliban kept up their commitments, in your opinion?
So I would not say that they have yet. We expected to see a reduction in violence. And while the Taliban have been scrupulous about not attacking U.S. or coalition forces, in fact, the violence against the Afghans is higher than it's been in quite a while. It's one of the highest, most violent periods of the war that we've seen to date. Average lethality is down just a little bit, but the number of enemy-initiated attacks is in fact, very worrisome. We need to get to intra-Afghan dialogue. It is uncertain that we're going to get to that at any time soon. That's really the next critical thing that needs to happen. And that's what leads us to the long-term conditions that would allow us to actually see a future where there's far less U.S. or coalition presence in the country.
How confident, General McKenzie, are you this far into the deal that a peaceful resolution can stem from this? Or are we on the verge of a reset?
Now, I wouldn't say that I'm confident or not confident. We don't need to believe in the Taliban. We don't need to like or dislike the Taliban. We need to study and observe the Taliban and see if they keep their commitments and move forward. And I think, honestly, the government of Afghanistan is trying very hard to do, you know, what they've undertaken to do as part of the agreement. I think right now the Taliban is not in the same place, and so that's how I draw my assessment of what the future is.
What's the repercussion to the Taliban if they're not being helpful? What does the U.S. military plan to do if they're not helpful and they're not keeping up to their commitments?
Carla, that ultimately is going to be a political, not a military decision. But if the Taliban envision a future where there's very little or no foreign presence in Afghanistan, then they have to create the conditions for that. And the conditions for that would be an agreement with the existing government of Afghanistan, a way forward that has a significant reduction in violence, and absolute promises that are verifiable to ensure that Al-Qaeda and ISIS have no safe haven in Afghanistan.
You had asked your team to further dig into the matter of Russian bounties being offered to the Taliban in exchange for the deaths of U.S. service members. Have your people found any more evidence to back up that initial report?
So, Carla, I asked that question back in January, you know, when I first received the report. And so we are continuing to dig. I have found nothing yet that would make me change my judgment that it is very worrisome, it's very concerning, but it's not proven to my satisfaction that actually occurred. We've really looked hard. We continue to look at a broad variety of things. but I've got nothing back yet that would change my judgment on it.
You know, General, I was in Afghanistan with General Nicholson back in 2017 when he was telling reporters that the U.S. had continued to get reports of the Russians arming the Taliban. What makes the idea of offering bounties so different than arming the Taliban to fight against the U.S. forces?
I think it's the human connection that you tie it to wanting to kill a specific kind of person, a specific American or a specific Afghan. I think that's what it makes it, frankly, you know, morally abhorrent and against, you know, and really against the Western way of war. We would not, so I find it particularly distasteful to even consider that. Look, we know Russia does not mean us well. We know that. They are not our friends. I've said this before. They have no interest in our success in Afghanistan or in a lot of other places as well. So it should not surprise us, and it does not surprise me that they work against us. That's just a given.
U.S. Marine General Kenneth Frank McKenzie, the head of U.S. Central Command, speaking with VOA Pentagon correspondent Carla Babb. Thank you for being with us on VOA Asia. The continuing spread of COVID-19 in the United States is making it very difficult for some Chinese au pairs to go back home. While they wait for flights to become available, they've been forced to spend money for temporary visas to avoid being deported. Veronica Valderas Iglesias looks at their plight.
Chinese au pairs skydiving, sledding, traveling, and visiting theme parks. All part of their experience as childcare workers in the U.S. But COVID-19 took all that fun away.
The main purpose of this program is to see Americans, to meet people from different culture. But after the pandemic, we lose all of these things. We're stuck in the house. The only thing we can do is to take care of the kids.
Au pairs are young foreigners who spend a year living with host families to care for their children. Sponsor companies in the U.S. help them get visas and find a family. They don't earn much, around $200 a week, plus a room and meals. But some au pairs from China now face shelling out cash for a new visa because their sponsor, Cultural Care Au Pair, dragged its feet booking flights home. In a statement to VOA, Cultural Care blamed the pandemic. Flights, specifically to China, have been difficult to obtain, frequently canceled. Zoe Lee found plenty of flights, but a Cultural Care agent said the company wouldn't reimburse her if she booked the ticket herself.
She only told me $4,000 is over our budget to buy a ticket for an au pair. I don't really know what that means. We don't deserve it, or...
With au pairs like Lee caught in limbo, Cultural Care offered two options. Their host families could pay a $1,500 fee, and the au pairs would get a 60-day J-1 visa extension at no extra cost. Or the au pairs could pay $455 for a temporary tourist visa. For au pairs, that's a lot of money.
I go back to China, I have to be quarantined, live in the hotel, and then we have to pay for every day. So I currently just don't want to spend any money here.
This host mom got an email from Cultural Care about the $1,500 option, but it didn't mention a justification for the large fee.
It was sort of a blanket email saying, hey, your au pair can extend for 2 months. You need to pay us $1,500 for this to happen. But there is no sort of understanding that she's going to be staying with you anyway.
Cultural Care did not respond to VOA's specific questions about its return flight obligations. The agency did say, however, that it had now booked flights for all Chinese au pairs with expiring visas and was at work on upcoming cases. The industry's trade group has told the White House international exchange programs, including au pairs, are projected to lose some $233 million in business because of the pandemic.
If they don't have money coming in, then they may not be able to justify for themselves, actually caring and taking care of the workers.
Fang Tian took Cultural Care offer to work for a host family for an additional 2 months to avoid being deported or having to pay for a tourist visa herself.
They urge me strongly by showing me the consequences. If I don't extend, you have to buy your insurance on your own, and you don't know how long you're going to wait, and you have no money, no friends here. You'll be alone. You'll be homeless.
In the end, she says, The system let her down. For VOA News, Veronica Valderas Iglesias, Washington.
Thanks for joining us. Thanks to our managing editor, Diane Gaub. Our VOA Asia team includes Doug Bernard, Keith Lane, and Jim Stevenson. I'm Ira Melman in Washington.